on the top of the hour news come boil down to two things. Does everybody out there just roll your eyes now when the political stuff comes up? The other thing is, can you go out to the koi thing and go fishing? Wonder what you catch a koi on. What fly? I bet it's a small one. Man, like a... fancy hooks. Dave's in a good mood in there. I went to Skytop this morning and picked some apples, and I brought Dave a donut, cinnamon donut. Boy, they're just good. But if you're going to go early. I mean, we got there at 9:15 and got pretty much in, parked, and boy, I left at noon to come home, and the line to get in the Skytop started down at East Flat Rock Road. Fancy hooks. Oh, me. You are you're listening to Woods and Water, South Carolina on 94.5 WGTK, the answer here in Greenville. And, yeah, okay. I'll leave that one alone now. I can't leave it alone. Politics. You know, this, and I may be a very, people may say you're a real simpleton when you say this, but here's my opinion of the election. It boils down for me to the Second Amendment. You got a real clear choice. One that wants to limit it with common sense gun control. Now, whose common sense are we following here? Common sense gun control to me is making sure I hit what I'm aiming at. And you've got somebody else whose son hunts as a staunch supporter of the Second Amendment. And to me, that's what it boils down to. It's, you know, I can't believe out of 300 million people, these are the two best. All right, these are the two that will stay in it long enough through the smearing and whatever else that goes on in politics these days. But that's what it boils down to me. I don't know what your thoughts are on it. And really, I'll roll my eyes when you tell me your thoughts. But, you know, since I'm behind the microphone, I get to tell you mine. You can roll your eyes and shut me off. But anyway, that's all the politics we're going to talk today. The weather. Boy, October really knew how to make an entrance today. If you got up this morning, walked outside and got in your car and went about your daily thing without standing there for a few seconds and breathing it in or going back in for a jacket, you may need to check your pulse. Wow, beautiful morning. I actually got to go deer hunting a couple times last part of the week, and which brings up a whole other subject. It was really nice. Got to watch a mom with triplets. You don't see triplets in the wild much anymore in whitetail deer. You know, two's kind of the standard, a lot of times one. But triplets, and I've seen her several times this spring and summer at the farm. And just really cool. In fact, but you want to know what frustration is for a bow hunter? You go in to put your stand in, and I was climbing this past week, and there are one tree that I normally climb in this one area, and it's a new area for me. It was new last year. We had some timber cutting also. It's a new area, and I'm still trying to figure out where the deer want to be and not necessarily where I want to be, because I like to hunt in pretty places, and the deer don't necessarily like those as much as I do. So there's two trees, and I'd climbed one tree, I don't know, 4 or 5 times last year, and I saw a few deer out of it. So I went back this year, and, okay, I'm going to try it again because it's surrounded by white oaks. And if you want to know where the deer are right now, find you an oak tree. There's going to be a deer underneath it at some point. It's not quite raining in the woods. It's more like misting, getting towards a drizzle of acorns coming down. So anyway, these two trees are about 25 yards apart. And I like the new one that I found because it's got some better background to it, if that matters at all, where I'm sitting. And so I climbed it. Well, first evening I'm sitting there, I see the deer coming. Exactly last year when I was sitting in the stand, the deer should be coming from right over there. And sure enough, they did. They came right from there, and it was just like nose to tail, nose to tail, nose to tail, four of them. And then a few minutes later, it was two more. And they stopped at the first white oak tree, which was about 60 yards away from me. And they meandered maybe to 50 yards. Well, I cut myself off at 30. That's as far as I'm shooting my bow. And so I had to sit there for like 45 minutes while all these deer, and there was a buck there somewhere. He was in the woods. I couldn't see him. I could hear him. He actually grunted a few times, which is very early, at least in my experience. And so when I got down out of the stand that night, coming down the stand, coming down the tree, I was like, I really need to move the stand over to the other tree over there, and that way I'll come back in the morning. I can be a little closer to the action. Got down the bottom. I was like, no, you pick this tree out. Let's just hang with it. Let's see if anything comes from the other direction you think they need to be coming from. So Friday morning, I'm sitting in the stand, and the deer come out, and they go to the same tree they went to Thursday evening. And for a bow hunter, that is just, especially, you know, when I thought about moving the stand anyway. So that was my, but you know what? I think everybody needs to spend a morning in a tree stand in the fall. And it's not to see the deer. It's everything else you encounter with a morning in the woods. You know, it's the squirrels jumping from treetop to treetop. And if you're a deer hunter, they scatter acorns, and then it does rain. It's the birds. You know, I never had so many birds on my case this weekend as I ever have. You know, just out of reach with the bow and the arrow, I could smack them. But, you know, just screeching at me. The squirrels get upset. Hawks coming through. Squirrels don't like hawks, let me tell you what. And then the deer. I mean, this fawn had triplets. I saw them Thursday evening, watched them for, I don't know, 45 minutes or so. And they were back Friday morning. But it was only the three little ones. And they were just, you know, they were feeding. All of a sudden, all three of them got up. Ears, I mean, you could tell they were intently watching something. And if you're a deer hunter, you're thinking, okay, here he comes. How big is he going to be? And all of a sudden, they just, I mean, tails up in a line running right back to where they came from. And I'm like, what in the world? So real quick, I got binoculars up, started looking, and saw these flashes of white in the brush and all, and comes out, and they're just all over Mom. She'd been bedded down somewhere right there, and it finally stepped out, and they saw her coming. They ran to her. I mean, they were just jumping all around. It was so much fun. I'm sorry. I love to hunt. I love to fill my freezer every year, but I love watching deer. They're so much fun to watch. So that's my bleeding heart thing for today. But it was fun watching those three. And that's unusual to have triplets. But they all look to be doing well. I mean, and that speaks to a really healthy deer herd. And I don't know how many animals we have in our little area. But for a doe to be able to carry triplets through as dry a summer as we've had, and for them to be as healthy as they are right now, it speaks to a very healthy deer herd, which is a good thing. I should have moved my stand. I would have had a much more enjoyable. I don't know that I wouldn't have shot her. But the other two, I would have put those two in the freezer, or one of them. But anyway, whatever. It was a good time. But really, the weather, and then going to Skytop this morning, and the donuts are just as good as they always have been. Spending a little family time with my family and all the other families up there. It was great to see all those kids up there running around the petting zoo, all the places the kids, their little playhouses and all. And I was sitting there going, this is great. You know, I love people that hunt and fish and camp and hike and all that. But all those parents who had their kids out there this morning, I guarantee you they got their weekly dose of fresh air today. And really, in the end, that's what it's about. It's about getting out as a family, outdoors. Yeah, it may just be pick up a bucket of apples, but that's it was worth the price of admission in the early morning and everything else. So if you're out there deer hunting and you wonder where they are, find an oak tree. You'll find the deer. Not quite as well, probably a little more frustrating than my situation, as my brother had a nice buck that walked around behind him, and he guessed it at 40, about 40 yards, and he paced it off. It was like 35, which is, you know, in his range. He probably could have. But it's good to know they're there and good to know they're healthy. Hang on through the break. I do have some calendar events thing to get through. And then we're going to talk to Michael Hook, who's with the Bob White Quail Initiative at the bottom of the hour. So hang on for more Woods and Water on the other side of the break. And there is no. Bringing you back to Woods and Water South Carolina with a little Huey Lewis in the news.
New York, New
you really call Huey Lewis a singer? I mean, he's good. His band is good. And I think that's what he's such a likable guy. You just like his music. And, of course, being tied to the Back to the Future movies, too, were pretty good. I'm sorry. I cannot let this go. I mean, there are tournaments for redfish, trout. There are sailfish tournaments. There are, you know, there are carp tournaments. I got invited to a carp tournament in Tennessee one time. Four Rivers Carp Tournament or something. I wonder, koi fishing. I'm going to have to figure out. Because I tell you why. Thinking back, when we were in Hot Springs, we're in Birmingham, not Birmingham either, where we were for the FLW Cup back in August. They had little moats, and it was full of carp and koi, and I seriously thought about taking a rod down there and see if I could get one to bite. But anyway, okay, a few things for the calendar of events. And in some of these, you'll hear these the festivals and stuff like that. In most of these festivals, I mean, they're good family events, but most festivals are geared around a lot of agriculture. And I think an understanding of agriculture is an understanding of, in some sense, of hunting and sustainability and conservation and all. And that's why you hear some of this stuff. Like the Eastern Carolina Ag Fair down in, it's Florence, South Carolina. You know, it's October 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, so next week or whatever. But it's, and a lot of other things, it's got pig races, horse shows, 4-H rabbit and poultry show. You know, there's part of a beef cow thing. But in going to these things as a family and spending time together, and a lot of these things are out there, you know, you kind of see where your food comes from. And a lot of people think it comes from Bilo. Well, it does. They're just a middleman. You know, it's grown on the local level, and that's what a lot of these things are. Like the South Carolina State Fair, which is coming up the 12th through the 23rd. You know, that is an ag-based fair. And there's a ton of stuff. Of course, there's a lot of entertainment, animals, you know, rides, crafts, and fairs. There again, pig races, border collie demonstrations, which are really cool. And there's something in here caught my eye, the Marsh Tacky performance. And if you don't know, I don't know if it's a South Carolina-based horse or we claimed it for ourselves, call the Marsh Tacky. And you're going to learn a little something here, right here in the calendar of events that you may or may not want to know. But anyway, Saturday, October 22nd, down at the South Carolina State Fair, they're going to have a Marsh Tacky horse performance. And I found this to be pretty interesting. One of South Carolina's best-kept secrets is the Marsh Tacky. But word is getting around about these sturdy little horses that have no quit in their anatomy. Critically endangered breed has received quite a bit of attention the past 7 years, including being named South Carolina's State Heritage Horse. There you go. Bloodlines can be traced back to Spanish colonial horses that arrived with the early settlers in America in the 1500s. Small bands of wild horses spawning from these early settlements survived for hundreds of years, foraging on the coastal plains of South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida. Marsh tackies played a significant role in South Carolina's history as they were culled from these roaming herds and became the main workhorse for the people who lived in the coastal lowlands. They plowed the fields, carried the men on hunts, and drove the family to town. Historical records from the American Revolutionary War have made note of the tacky horse used by famous Revolutionary War General Francis Marion. His militia rode these, you know, through the marshes and swamps of South Carolina. So I thought that was pretty interesting that you have a horse that's pretty much tied to the state of South Carolina, the marshes we have around here. But a really good one that's a family deal that my dad used to love to go to, and he'd tell me there's nothing like sawdust from 12 teams building boats, and that's Georgetown Wooden Boat Show. It's coming up here October the 15th through October 16th, Saturday and Sunday in Georgetown, South Carolina. And it's pretty interesting. They have a lot of things that are going on, you know, street vendors, and a lot of it's boating, you know, obviously boating-related crafts and all. Admission's free to the Wooden Boat Show. It's set up along Georgetown's Main Street, and then they have a big building where they have the Wooden Boat Challenge. Teams of two will compete to build a rowing skiff within a four-hour time limit, and then test their boats for seaworthiness in a rowing relay on the Sandpit River. Teams will be judged on construction speed, quality of work, and rowing speed. So not only do you have to build it, you have to get in the water with it. And as always, kids' activities, you model boat building and knot tying. And knots is one of those things that I am I just never got. I go to ratchet straps. Forget the knots and the ropes. I had to go straight to ratchet straps. My dad could tie every knot in the Navy handbook. My brother stacks granny knots one on top of the other. So you get 18 or 20 of them together. The knot's not really going anywhere anymore because I don't know if it looks like a knot. But anyway, there's always something for kids at these events. But that's a good one. The Georgetown Wooden Boat Show. Spend a weekend in Georgetown. We were down there for the tarpon tournament. Happens down there every year. Really neat little place to go. The Sumter chapter of Delta Waterfowl is having their banquet on Saturday, October the 15th. It's going to be at the Gamecock Shrine Club in Sumter, South Carolina. Doors open at 5:30. Dinner's at 7. You can buy your tickets. They offer a youth ticket for $20. And they go on up sponsor table. You can, it's easier to tell everybody to go to Delta Waterfowl and look for events in your state and go from there. And also in that same vein, we had CCA coming to the Scope Convention back in the NWTF, and they did a real good presentation. They have two events coming up here shortly. October the 13th in Lexington, South Carolina, they're having their banquet at the Lexington Municipality Complex. And then Todd Sharp is your contact there. And then October the 21st at York County, events at Manchester on Cinema Drive in Rock Hill. And again, the easiest way to find some of these events is go to the CCA website and look for events in your area. You know, with hunting season here, there's two ways to go to it. There's the don't do this, and I have an article here, 10 reasons never to hunt a food plot. And they're good reasons. I think I'll save that till next week. Because there's another article out here that I think is more appropriate. And that's from the Rocky Mountain Elk Federation. It's through sportingclassicsdaily.com. If you don't have Sporting Classics Daily, it's a great little newspaper, the little email that comes out and probably usually has three or four stories and links to the Sporting Classics Daily website. And really good. But Rocky Mountain Elk Federation it's a really good organization. It's another one of those that's, you know, dedicated to elk restoration, habitat. They're really have a major push on because of the federal lands out west, the land grab by the states that's going on. But they came out with 25, and I won't read all of these. 25 ways hunting is conservation. And bear in mind that this conservation is done by hunters. It's not, you know, for as much as I love to go hiking and all that, most hikers don't contribute. I mean, they buy the stuff and they pay hiking tax and stuff like that, but they don't want to offend anybody, but they don't contribute like we do. Not many people do. But here's just a list of just a few things. And you know, elk, we have elk in North Carolina now. They sure didn't get there because Civic Group wanted them there. In 1907, only 41,000 elk remained in North America. Thanks to the money and hard work invested by hunters to restore and conserve habitat, today there are more than 1 million. In 1900, only 500,000 whitetails remained. Thanks to conservation work spearheaded by hunters, today there are more than 32 million. In 1900, only 100,000 wild turkeys remained. Thanks to hunters, today there are more than 7 million. And you'll notice these dates, early 1900, that's because we were a growing country. We had a population to fill, to feed. And market hunting was where it was. You know, all the game in the East, as it was used up, they moved further west. Market hunters, they bring it back east because you had a population to feed. In 1901, few ducks remained. Thanks to hunters' efforts to restore and conserve wetlands, today there are more than 44 million. In 1950, only 12,000 pronghorn remained. Thanks to hunters, today there are more than 1.1 million. Through state licensing fees, hunters pay $796 million a year for conservation programs. Through donations to groups like Rocky Mountain Elk Federation, hunters add $440 million a year to conservation efforts. In 1937, this is the Pittman-Robertson Act, hunters actually requested an 11% tax on guns, ammo, bows, and arrows to help fund conservation. That tax so far has raised more than $8 billion for wildlife conservation. South Carolina got about $14 million of that this year. Altogether, hunters pay more than $1.6 billion a year for conservation programs. No one gives more. Three out of four Americans approve of hunting, partly because hunters are America's greatest positive force for conservation. And you'll see that in polling. 76 to 82% approve of hunting. Now, drop in trophy hunting and it falls. Which brings up another good point. What's a trophy? I mean, I believe a trophy is whatever it is to you. You know? Sometimes that's a first deer. Sometimes that's a deer you decide that, you know, I'm going to wait and get one with a bow. I mean, that's a trophy. No matter what it is, it's not all, trophy is not all tied to how big a fish is, how big the antlers are. A lot of my friends still tell me, I can't figure out a way to eat antlers. And it's true. You know, any big deer I have killed has been purely out of luck. I don't spend enough time in the woods to consider myself a trophy hunter. Sorry. That's just realism. Going back. Hunting funds conservation and the economy. Hunting funds conservation and the economy, generating $38 billion a year in retail spending. Female participation, this is an important one. Female participation in hunting, 3.35 million, is on the rise thanks to a 10% increase from 2008 to 2012, which brings me to a programming note. Next week, as long as this week goes according to plan, Eva Shockey will be on Woods and Water, South Carolina next Saturday. She is, you know, Jim Shockey's her dad, big hunting program. Eva is a very sharp young lady who has pretty much taken over as spokesman for a lot of hunting. You'll see on Fox News and all, she'll be here next Saturday. She's not going to be in here. She'll be on the show. Okay, Dave, quit giving me funny looks. But female participation is up. In fact, October the 13th, Taylor will become a member of the deer hunting family. We're going deer hunting. She's going to have the rifle. And we're both excited about that. So this year, when you run into a hunter, thank them. You know, don't look down your nose. We fund the places nobody else cares about until it's a political issue. So anyway, hang on. We're going to talk to Michael Hook about conservation, Bob White Quail, when we come back from War Woods and Water, South Carolina. Last Saturday, had a chance to get down to Ridgeway, South Carolina to the second annual Bird Dog Revival. What a great time. Getting back in touch with my roots of quail hunting. And I'd been emailing a fella about a program here in South Carolina. And wouldn't you know, when I looked on the event list of speakers, he was on there. So I met Michael Hook, which is always nice to meet your guest before we got on the air. And he's joining us today. Michael, welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. I enjoyed the weekend last weekend myself. I always enjoy getting out and talking birds and bird dogs, so feel that I'm with my folks out there.
I hear you. I did. I came back, and I told my wife when I got back, I said, I'm glad I did not take any cash with me. I said, because if I had it, we'd have been back in the bird dog business last weekend.
Yeah. It's awful tempting, isn't it?
Puppies. And really, it doesn't matter. I'm kind of a dog guy, and I guess most people that bird hunt or duck hunt or whatever are dog people first and kind of hunter second. But, boy, you put me around puppies, and I want to take one home. I'm probably worse than my girls in that respect. just want to get my home, you know?
I understand.
Well, before we get started on this, take just a minute and introduce yourself. And you work for the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources, and kind of give us an explanation of what you do down there in Columbia.
Sure. Yeah, my name's Michael Hook. Like I say, I work with the SCDNR small game program. I'm relatively new in this position, been here about a year, year and a half or so. But we deal with all the small game animals in South Carolina. Doves, quail, squirrels, rabbits, grouse, woodcock, you know, any of our small game.
Yeah.
Doves and quail are probably our biggest animals we deal with. Like I say, they get the most of our attention. So, like I say, doves, from the standpoint of they're just a very popular species to hunt, and like I say, they naturally just get a lot of attention. And quail, because of all their, you know, their 60 or 70 year decline, you know, they've garnered a good bit of attention right. as well, trying to stop that slide. So, but yeah, like I said, we do mess with squirrels and fox squirrels and rabbits as well. So, we're a small shop. It's just two of us, myself, and then another guy named Michael Small.
Yeah.
He's sort of our dove guru.
Right. I met him too. And he said, if you didn't hurry up, get there, he'd set up the display and tell you it had been done.
Yep. But
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, but that's sort of what we do. Just monitor populations. Try to, like I say, in the case of quail, try to foster habitat and hopefully bring them back.
Well, and that's the whole point of this interview is kind of get an idea of how we can bring them back, how we can help you, and what the state is doing to help the quail population. I guess you formed something called the South Carolina Bob White Initiative.
That's correct. Yeah, it's a process. The process started decades ago. You know, everybody saw the quail decline and couldn't figure out what to do. And my predecessor, twice removed, started the Southeast Quail Study Group.
Right.
And, you know, it went through several iterations. It became the National Bob White Initiative. There was a couple plans written, and they sort of laid out how we needed to go about restoring quail at a landscape level. Because, you know, everybody wants to blame the loss of quail on something else, but when it comes down to it, it's just habitat. You know, the habitat for quail has changed so much.
It has.
In the last 50 or 60 years, you know, and it's not just one thing, you know, it's the clean farm and it's cattle farmers switching from Lespedes and clover to, you know, the sod forming grass.
Right.
It's our forests getting older. It's CRP pines. You know, it's a whole wide variety of things affecting the quail habitat. So like I say, they developed a plan and, it was a really good plan, and it involved about 600 biologists nationally. And like I say, when it boils down to it, they said, you know, here's sort of the blueprint. You as a state go out and figure out how to do it. So South Carolina's response was to form the Quail Council and create the Bob White Initiative. So back in 2014, December 2014,
okay.
they had the very first meeting of the Quail Council, and it's a group of about 30, 40 people that had anything to do with quail in South Carolina. It was most of your big agencies, NRCS, Forest Service, DNR, you know, it was the heads of agencies of all those. And there were a couple key landowners and folks that had been involved in quail back in the good old days. So, like I say, it really covered a wide variety of folks. And like I say, that's really how the initiative got started. And then they created a couple committees. They created the technical committee, which is what I'm on. And that's the nuts and bolts. That's
right.
getting the habitat on the ground. Created an outreach. We've got a Facebook page, web page. We got a bunch of brochures. We got a logo. Hopefully you'll see some stickers floating around with our little logo on it.
So. All right.
And if you want a quail sticker, just shoot us an email, and I'll be glad to send you a quail sticker. So, a Bob White Initiative sticker.
Great. I'd like one of those myself.
Well, we can arrange that.
But
we certainly can.
You know, you mentioned something there, the Southeastern Quail Study. I was around when that was formed, and we went. I remember we had meetings at Nilo Plantation in Georgia, which was Olin Winchester's place. We went to Pineland Plantation, and when you get on they are so far removed from the average landowner. You know, I mean, that Pineland, you know, had a 30-something-year-old kid from University of Georgia running it. And, you know, it was, I don't know how many thousands of acres, but he had so much in row crop and timber management. And, you know, he told me, he said, my only stress is when the melon people bring people down from New York to hunt, I need to produce 5 to 6 coveys an hour.
Right.
You know, but there's a whole staff dedicated to that. And I guess what we're trying to do here in South Carolina now is to bring it down to the landowner level.
Correct.
The
absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, you can have quail and it doesn't take a whole lot of work. And, you know, that's exactly what those plantations like you're talking about, they just dedicate themselves to quail. And I realize, you know, the typical landowner can't do that to, you know, to the same extent. But like I say, just a little bit of habitat work, and and the quail respond quite easily.
Yeah.
One of the services we offer is, you know, I'll go out, look at a person's farm or what have you, and I'll write up a little management plan. And in some instances, there's not much that they really need to do, to just manipulate a few things here and there, and they'll have a decent, viable quail population. And like I say, you know, in most terms, it doesn't take a whole lot. So, yeah, like I say, you know, some of it, more than anything, is perception. You know, over the years, we've grown to like the well manicured look, and
right.
And what's beautiful to, yes, a quail is not what's beautiful to us.
And you know, when you look at a patch of warm season grass, you're thinking, oh, it's kind of ugly. Look at all the different times. It's not clean and manicured. And you're right. A lot of times, good habitat is not pretty.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. So.
And if you look at Tom Hall's place, Magnolia Lodge, you know, we took a tractor tour, and it wasn't, you know, it's kind of rough. You burn, and you got dead snags sticking there, and you got some just native grasses coming up or whatever, and that's what the birds like, because they need that protection. More than anything, quail need protection. That's why I think when you had every 10-acre field separated by a hedgerow or a grown-up fence line or whatever, that's when you had a lot of quail, because they could run those fence lines, and
exactly,
hawks and foxes could never get to them.
Absolutely. Without a doubt, for sure. Yep.
Well, where are some of the, you know, you got the quail initiative going. Where are some of the areas, because I know you talked about this Saturday, some of those areas that you are focusing on here in South Carolina, kind of, and you're kind of in these core areas, then you're going to branch out from there. Where are those areas you're starting in?
Sure. We've got four focal areas in the state, and you know, we started with four because that's what we thought we could handle getting on the ground. And the idea is to do some work on these different Keystone properties, show the folks in the area, the landowners, that, hey, you know, this is all you have to do, and you can do it on your property. And the idea is to hopefully get them interested and going, yeah, I can do that. And
okay,
and then hopefully you'll be able to change the landscape the habitat at the landscape level. But one of our focal areas is up near the Sand Hills National Wildlife Refuge, and it's actually one of the first in the nation that's on wildlife refuge property.
Okay.
But it's, the focal area itself encompasses Chesterfield, Darlington, and Lee County.
All right.
And like I said, we've been doing a lot of work up there. There's a lot of landowner interest up there already.
Okay.
And like I say, you know, and that's just been by word of mouth. You know, there's a lot of folks up there in that general area that's interested in quail. And it, you know, it's not just quail hunters. I couldn't tell you how many times I'll get a call from somebody. I just want to hear the whistle again.
Sure.
You know, I remember growing it up as a kid, and
right,
we used to have them on our farm. I don't want to hunt them, but I just want to hear them.
Right.
So, you know, I hear that all the time, and nothing warms my heart more than hearing that. But, like I say,
when that's the motto on your sign, bring back the whistle, that's kind of exactly what you're looking for, is people that want to hear the whistle again.
Exactly. I tell you, moving down the state until the center portion of the state, we've got the Oakley focal area. And the Keystone property there is the Oakley WMA, and it's actually Forestry Commission land, South Carolina Forestry Commission land. And what's interesting about it is it's half agriculture and half pine plantation. So that sort of affords us the opportunity to show farmers, hey, you know, this is what we do for the quail, and you know, it, you're not taking up that much of your space, and the quail populations really respond. And so it's the only focal area so far that we're able to do that. The rest of them are in the timber. So,
okay. Right.
And it covers Clarendon, Calhoun, and Orangeburg County.
Okay.
Down closer to the coast, we've got the Webb complex. The
right.
Webb Center is the Keystone. That's one of the DNR properties.
Right.
And, like I say, it's centered there in Allendale and Hampden County. And lastly is our big Gold Star standard tier two focal area, and it covers Union and Newberry County. It's the Indian Creek focal area. And,
okay. And
it follows different protocol than the other. When it comes to habitat and monitoring, it follows the national program. So, like I say, it's just more in depth. It takes a lot more work to do the monitoring and all. But the practices are the same.
Okay.
The landowner outreach is the same, you know. Indian Creek has been around. It's a project that started back in 03 or 04.
Right.
And it was doing the same thing as these focal areas. It was a focal area before we knew what focal areas were.
Okay.
And when people ask, well, Michael, is this thing going to really work? I can point to Indian Creek and go, yeah, you know, we know it'll work because it's already worked here in the state. Like I said, they started that project in 03 or 04, and on the fall cubby counts, we're hearing 500% more birds than we were when we started there.
Wow.
So, you know, we know it'll work. It's just going to take a little bit of time and effort. And so, like I say, hopefully we'll get this ball rolling.
And you mentioned something interesting there, covey counts. And, you know, the first thing that people ask you, well, how do you know how many quail you got? Quail are kind of interesting how you don't fly over and look for them like you do with ducks. You don't have, you know, a hunter. Well, you do have a hunter harvest, but most people that deer hunt nowadays, you know, you get the little surveys and stuff like that. I guess bird hunters do too. But with quail, you have what you call a whistle survey, which is really interesting. Tell us a little bit about how you measure success in the Quail Initiative program.
Sure. Each one of these focal areas, we have, we have a monitoring program, and in the springtime, we'll go out and we do exactly what you're saying. We try to cover a fair portion of the property in points, and it's basically just a route around the property,
right.
And you have designated stops half mile apart.
Okay.
And you go out and listen for 8 minutes, and like say, you record all the bob whites you hear, and you know, the black magic statistics come into effect here a little bit, but you know, you do, and you come out with a pretty good idea of your breeding birds. In these focal areas, we're not just looking at quail populations either.
Sure.
The non-game birds that use these same habitats has got the same trajectory as the quail. They've experienced, the Bachman sparrow, indigo buntings, you can match their graphs right against the Bob White's graphs, and they've taken the same 60-year nosedive that the quail have.
Okay.
So we're also monitoring those species as well, and it's about five or six species that we're listening for when we go out and do these. And you know, if you don't believe birds can't be a little bit noisy, you try to go out and locate six or so birds while you're trying to listen. As a quail biologist, it's hard for me to ignore the quail.
Sure. And
so I lose focus a little easier than most. But like I said, it's an interesting project. It's one of my favorite things about the whole focal area project.
And for people listening in the springtime, a male Bob White, a cock bird, will go around and he'll whistle because he's trying to attract a mate. And that's when you say you're listening for quail whistling, that's what you're listening for. That male out there, he's doing his Bob White trying to attract a female, and that's how you judge how many mating birds you got out there.
Yeah, and that's the quintessential call. When you think of quail, that's the one you think of.
Yep.
Is that Bob White sound. In the fall, we also do a fall covey count,
and
we're listening for we're still listening for Bob Whites, but they make a different sound in the fall, and it's just sort of like a muted little beep noise.
Yep.
And you know, it's sort of nondescript, and if you were walking out in the woods, you really wouldn't notice it unless you were really listening for it. So, but that gives us an idea how many coveys are in the area in the fall.
All right. And you do still do hunter surveys?
That's correct.
Okay.
Absolutely, yeah. And typically, we've got a list of folks that are interested in doing them, and we mail those out right before hunting season. And you know, you basically just keep a diary of when you go, where you go, how many flushes you have, you know, how many you kill. And we ask you that you save a couple wings and mail them back to us. We have a prepaid envelope and all. Last year, we started an online version of this, trying to make it easier, trying to get some more folks involved. You can go to dnr.sc.gov/surveys/small-game and sign up for it. And like I say, I do it myself, and on my smartphone. I've saved the survey as an icon on my phone, and I get back to the truck in the evening, click that icon, fill out the data, and send it in.
Okay.
You know, it's easy to do. So I still got to clip my wing if I'm lucky enough to,
sure,
to find
yeah.
a burden.
Yeah.
But like I say, yeah, we certainly do that. And, you know, statewide, we're also doing the same monitoring and surveys as well. So,
gotcha.
You know, that's one way we keep up with the statewide population. I'm pretty excited to say this year's whistle count was the highest in 3 years, and it's the first time we've seen an increase in 7.
Wow.
So, you know, it's not much, but
yeah.
but it's something.
Sure.
You know, it makes a quail hunter feel a little bit better,
sure.
knowing that it's not always going down. We did have a little uptick this year.
Okay. Well, got a couple minutes left. I know you talked some Saturday about a program for landowners, and it's, you know, I guess if you're, and you were talking about farmers. Farmers is kind of, you got a monetary change off with farmers, because what you're trying to do is get in to leave a little spoil on the edge of the field, right?
Correct, yeah. Yeah, there's several assistance programs. You know, there's the tried and true EQIP and CRP, which are federal programs. EQIP's run by the NRCS. CRP's run by FSA. But, you know, there's a lot of other money out there as well. I mean, the Longleaf Alliance will assist landowners planting and thinning and burning.
Okay.
And, like I say, anymore, there's a good bit of money out there for early successional habitat. And one that a lot of folks don't think about is the pollinator initiative. You know, there's butterflies and bees have exhibited the same decline as quail.
Okay.
And there's a lot of money out there for them. And when I look at that habitat that they're trying to create, I see quail habitat.
Sure.
You know, it's very similar. So, but there's a good deal of money out there available. In each one of these focal areas, we are trying to get a farm bill biologist hired. And the idea is to help the landowners identify these programs.
Okay.
So right now we have the Oakley biologist starting in November. We are getting ready to hopefully interview for the Lee County position. The Newberry position starts October 1st, and it's interesting in the fact that it is a joint position between Forest Service, DNR, and Quail Forever.
Wow.
So, yeah, this is Quail Forever's first foray into South Carolina, so we're really excited about that, too.
Brings back memories of the old Quail Unlimited.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, that's a space that we need filled.
Sure.
So, but like I say, hopefully soon you'll be able to contact somebody in your area
okay.
about this work. Otherwise, right now, it's just myself and Michael Small. So, please, you know, feel free to call. And,
okay.
And you know, you can also call your NRCS office
okay.
and all as well. You know, they certainly have all the information. But,
well,
but yeah, we're certainly here and available for any questions.
Cool. Well, I think we got a good start on this. As with anything, you kind of scratch the surface the first time around. Let's get together back. Let's get back together, you know, late winter, early spring, and talk about what some of the landowners can be doing as they ramp up, you know, deer hunters planting food plots and stuff like that, landowners prescribe burning. I mean, there's a whole lot more out there. Let's do this again sometime soon.
Sure. Sounds great.
All right. Appreciate it, Michael.
Uh-huh.
And we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Yeah.
Woods and Water, South Carolina. Appreciate Michael doing that interview. And for all of you out there wondering, bring back the whistle. What's the whistle? This is the whistle we're talking about. And when you grew up in the South in the 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, that was it. That's what you lived for. And even today, I can get cold chills sitting in the tree stand or on a crisp spring morning. We were down at Belfast for an archery shoot, And there was a Bob White whistling in the woods, and my wife kept having to drag me back over to the archery shoot because I wanted to go listen to the quail. So, but yeah, there's, and you know, when you a lot of us on here, deer hunters, we manage for deer. We food plot, we prescribe burn, you know, we do all of this for a white-tailed deer. And that benefits them greatly. But it's amazing when you shift your focus just a little bit lower in size and manage for the small game. Everything benefits, you know, because your small game, that's your focus. But everything you do for them down the line benefits other wildlife. So it's I'm excited about that program. Makes me want to jump on the tractor at the farm and start planning, and I may still do that. I want to get this out there because we're always forgetting, and if you're like me, you forget too. Applications for the 2016-2017 public drawing waterfowl hunts are out there. They're not due until October 31st. Just trying to get it out there so you don't run up to Nova on the 1st and say, I forgot about it because I didn't get it on there until the end of October. A lot of great places. Bear Island, Sandy Beach, Santee Coastal, the Reserve, Santee Delta. A lot of great places to go duck hunt. So be aware that's out there. I'll cover it more in a couple weeks or so just to remind you. And we haven't had Chuck in a while, so let's see. Chuck Norris was once on Celebrity Wheel of Fortune and was the first to spin. The next 29 minutes of the show consisted of everyone standing around awkwardly waiting for the wheel to stop. Thanks for being here. As always, make time to get out there. Take the back roads when you can. Had to take the back roads down from Asheville this morning for a wreck. And be careful and don't forget the camera. See you here next week with more Woods and Water, South Carolina.